Should we start? Okay. All right, gang. Where's cartels? Oh, there they are. It's a shame that people aren't here for Jai Radhamadava, because I wanted to make Jai Radhamadava a part of the seminar. But everyone considers Jai Radhamadava just to be a ritual you do before the seminar, right? That's proving the point I was making in the seminar, which we're going to be making a little later in a heavier fashion than you did yesterday. It's a disconnect. Disconnect means that when people chant Jai Radhamadava, they don't know what they're chanting. If we understood what we were chanting when we chant Jai Radhamadava, we would listen. Because Jai Radhamadava is the most intimate prayer. I know, I just preached it to the wind now, but it also can't count. So Jai Radhamadava is the most intimate prayer, and if we're connected with it, we'll be with Krishna in Vrindavan and the Gopis and the Yamuna and Mother Yashoda and Govardhan Hill. But unfortunately, we're not connected with what we're doing, so things have become very ritualistic. So we'll chant Jai Radhamadava anyway, for those of you. And we're going to chant it later when everybody is here. Try to help the devotees understand what the purpose of chanting what Jai Radhamadava is. It's not just a ritual that you do before class.
Jai Radhamadava Kunja Virati
Jai
Radhamadava Kunja Virati
Jai Radhamadava 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 Jai Radhamadava
Namacharya Shivavira Stakwit Vijaya Rem Sego Shikrishna Chaitanya Bravo Nichananda Shivaita Ganatha Shiva Siddhiko Bhakta Rindu Vijaya Shishi Radhakrishna Go Kukada Sain Kudradakunda Gini Godan Vijaya Vrindavan Vijaya Vacharanam Vijaya Navadidam Vijaya Jagannath the Sami Kajai, Omai Kajai. Shimari La Siddhi Kajai, Sukhveda Bhakta Vrindi Kajai. Gaur Premananda Kajai. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. Om Vyanat Timitanta Shad, Anjana Shakaya Chapsur. Om Mani Tam, Yena Tlaskai, Shri Guruve Namaha. So now that all of you have just considered the chanting of Jai Radhanatha to be a ritual to call you to class, we're going to do something different. We're going to help or assist or facilitate you entering into the mood of Jai Radhanatha. Because it's not just some, it's not like the triangle that calls you to prasadam, you know, the horn that calls you to prasadam, or whatever, the alarm clock that wakes you up in the morning. It's a spiritual sound vibration that connects you with Vrindavan. So we're going to change the seminar a little bit because I was a little disappointed people were here to try to ask about it. Of course, the name of the seminar, for those of you who weren't here yesterday, is Connecting with Krishna, or, put it in negative, Why Don't I Experience Ecstasy Like I Experienced When I First Joined the Hare Krishna Movement? Where did all the ecstasy go? Why is everything so dull and dry? And chanting my rounds is a struggle. And so hopefully we're going to help you all understand this. So first we're going to chant Jai Radhanatha. But in a little different way. Because what we were talking about yesterday was being out of touch with what we're doing. That means we're pretty ritualistic, right? We got a lot of rituals. And we're going to be going over them later, asking all of you how many rituals you do, you know, what the purpose of the rituals are, and what rituals can you give up. We're not talking about the four regular rituals. But we're very much oriented into all these little detailed rituals. And also, another issue that we have in the Krishna Conscious Movement is that a lot of our rituals are in a different language, right? I'm not talking about English. I'm not talking about Zoroastrian creation. I'm talking about Bengali and Sanskrit. So, once upon a time, I was watching some Bengali devotees chanting Bengali bhajans. There was a Bengali devotee chant by Bengali bhajans. Some of you may have. And I was thinking, wow, they're really in tune. They're really connected with the Bengali bhajans. So why can't I be connected? Then I realized I didn't understand. The reason is because I didn't understand what I was chanting. And they understood because that is their language. So we have a lot of stuff in different languages. I mean, let's give the example of the Catholic Church. For many years, people having trouble going to the Catholic Church on Sunday because the Mass was in Latin. Does anyone here speak Latin or understand Latin? You do, when educated first. I took Latin up in school. I went to the Waldorf School, which is a worldwide educational institution, and I didn't like it. So, and also I speak some Latin languages, like Spanish. So, in any case, because they understood what they were chanting, well, let's talk about the church. Because people didn't understand what they were chanting, they lost interest in the church. So then they changed the church's language into what we call the vernacular. That's a fancy word. Vernacular means the local language, basically. You know, if we hear the Zoroastrian, France, it would be French, or Spain, it would be Spanish. I think you understand what I mean. And then people started to come back. So I'm not suggesting that we change our chant into English. But I am suggesting that we become aware of what we're chanting when we're chanting. And too much or too often I see this disconnect that the devotees are just doing these things. Yesterday we went over the obeisances, for example. And we pointed out how we don't think about what the obeisances mean when we're chanting the obeisances. I mean, it's really an ecstatic chant. You know, we're either into Prabhupada or our spiritual master. And then glorifying Prabhupada is servant of Shilwakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Actually, if you picture these things in your mind, the way to actually appreciate the words is to picture the meaning in your mind. You know, visualize, imagine, picture. So when I hear Namaste Saraswati Devi, then I picture Srila Prabhupada walking along the banks of the Radha. I mean, we all have different pictures in our mind. So I picture Prabhupada walking on the banks of the Radha Kund with his spiritual master Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and getting instruction. Those instructions are, you know, preach in the Western world, preach in English, and even Prabhupada getting instructions in a dream, take sannyas. Prabhupada said he was, what, horrified. So all these things come to my mind. So that even that first line, Namaste Saraswati Deve, becomes like a source of inspiration. And then Gauravani Pracharani, which means the teachings of Gaura. Who's Gaura? No, it's not me though. Anyway, he's on the altar. We'll introduce you to him later on. He's the one next to Nittai. If you don't know who Nittai is, you're in trouble. You're in the wrong camp. Just like I was speaking to one of my disciples yesterday, who went to a wedding and she arrived at the wrong wedding. She was singing. No, she's not getting married. She heard that. But she was singing at a wedding, so she goes. It's a professional singer. And she goes to the wrong wedding that discovers at the wrong wedding, singing the wrong song at the wrong wedding. So, excuse me. So, Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pacharani, teaching Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message. What is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message? Anyone have an idea?
Hare Krishna.
You know, chant Hare Krishna. That's what you're talking about. So also you picture that. Just think about how much is encapsulated in the Pranab Mantra we're saying. You can really expand. You can do a whole class on it. Gauravani Pacharani. Nirvishesha. What is Nirvishesha? Yeah, it basically means without variety. The technical, you know, the direct translation, which is impersonal. So impersonalism. In other words, everything's one, I'm one, you're one, we're all God. Everything's contained within that word, Nirvishesha. And then Shunyavadi, means what? Voidism. Like Buddhism, everything is nothing. Nothing is real, strawberry fields forever. You ever sing that song? No? That's a Beatles song. Nothing is real, strawberry fields forever. Anyway. So that's Shunyavadi. And then Paschacha. Where's that right? We discussed it yesterday.
Western
world. Krishna West. I can say that today because nobody's spying on me. Anyway, forget that I said that. So, Nirvishesha, Paschacha, Deja, in those countries, Deja Tarna, you know, spreading Krishna consciousness. So, even in something so simple like that, there's an ocean of ecstasy. Isn't it? I mean, it's just amazing if you think about that. I went to speak, and I said later on today we're going to go through the Gurubhashtaka prayers. And so we're trying to enter into the movie. But before that, I wanted to do Jai Radha Madhava again, as I mentioned, and try to enter into the mood of Jai Radha Madhava, doing one verse, one line, at a time. So, I don't know if we can, I guess we can do this musically, just with our hands, because the cartel is going to be too much. So, first we're going to chant the first line. What's the first line? How would you know? Jaya. Jaya. No. Jaya Radha Madhava. What? Kunjamirare. What does it mean? What's a kunja?
Bush.
Yeah, the grows. Grows. The bushes. Kunja is like a bush. Or, you know, big bush. Because if you have a big bush, you can hide behind it. If you have a small bush, you can't hide behind it. And who is hiding behind the bushes in Vrindavan? Lord Chaitanya? Radha Madhava, Krishna and Radharani. Jaya, all glories to Radharani and Madhava. Madhava means, of course, the husband of the goddess of fortunes, the name of Krishna. Kunjibihari. So, anyway, so let's do an experiment. Let's picture that in our minds. I know we're not all sahajas. I'm not asking you to, you know, enter into the Rasalila, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But we're chanting that song. This song was given to us. It's a song written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and it was given to us by Prabhupada. So obviously, we're meant to enter into the mood. I mean, many of the songs that we have a very exalted mood in devotional service. Like the Tulsi prayers. The Tulsi prayers, you're praying to become basically a Manjari Gopi. Wow. Because when you circumambulate Tulsi, you're praying to get free from sins. It's a little bit different mood. You're praying to get free from sins of killing Brahmins. So depending on what level you're at, if you're going around killing Brahmins, then just circumambulate Tulsi. And you become free from the offenses of killing Brahmins. So, let's go on to Jaya Radha. So, Jaya, all glories to Radha Madhava for enjoying Kunja Vihari. Vihari means to enjoy. Like there's a state in India called Bihar. And that comes from Bihari. Krishna is called Bihari, the enjoyer. So, Kunja Vihari. So, what we want to do is, take a minute, we'll just like try to picture in our minds what it means to have Radha Krishna. Don't look in the bushes, just understand them behind the bushes. We're not advanced enough to look what's behind the bushes. Like that. Only they're behind the bushes. We're on the other side. So just try to picture that in your mind, and then we'll just chant. We'll chant. 3 or 4 times that first responsibly. That first, this is just an experiment. I haven't done it before, but I like experimenting. So let's do that right now. I'll chant, and you respond. I'll chant, respond, I'll chant, respond. Take a minute, fix the image, visualization in your mind of what it looks like that Radha Krishna in the bushes of Vrindavan. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. So, did you all experience something different? This time, normally thinking, well, they're calling me to class now. Anyone want to share? I was able to picture from the other side of the bushes that Krishna and Radharani are joining the bushes. I can see the bush, and I can see Krishna's peacock on the top of the bush. Anybody else have any interesting realizations? Don't be shy. You're only on the internet, so it's okay. No, we're not on the internet, but this will be on the internet later.
But it comes closer to the heart, it goes deeper.
Yes.
It doesn't remain on the surface.
Yes, it comes closer to the heart, goes deeper, doesn't remain on the surface. And actually, that's the right type of chanting. Because the chanting should be done from the heart, the subtle body. And then it manifests in the gross body. So, as we mentioned yesterday, devotional service is performed with the subtle body of the mind, and actually with the spiritual mind, with the soul, and then it manifests grossly. So, like we find so many injunctions in the Gita, the whole purpose of yoga is to stop the turning of the mind. That's, of course, from Patanjali's Yoga Sutra. In the Gita, just fix the mind on Manmana Bhagavan Bhakto Madhyaji Mahamanasvaru. Just think of me, become my devotee, worship me, etc. These are all things done internally. So we have to internalize our devotional service. And the reason we're not experiencing ecstasy is we're not internalizing our devotional service. So let's try the second verse. Gopi Jana Balava Gidivada Gidivada Pari. So, what does this mean? Gopi means what? Coward boys? Gopi Jana, that means the gopis. Balava, very dear, and it also means he's enjoying. He's enjoying with the gopis of Vrindavan. And Gidi Madhukari means what? The lifter of Govardhan Hill. Gidi Raj. Gidi means hill. And then Hari. Hari can also mean to enjoy. Like when we chant Hare Krishna, we don't chant Hare Krishna. It's actually, we're members of the Hare Krishna movement. If I can say we're members of the Hare Krishna. Because Krishna understands. Hare, as we mentioned yesterday, is Radharani's name, all energy of the Lord. Please engage me in your service. So, anyway, so Krishna is the enjoyer of the gopis, and he's dancing, and many of these rasa mandalas, where Krishna's enjoying dancing the rasa dance with gopis, are close to Giriraj. Anyone here been to see Giriraj? Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Giriraj is also on the altar. Anyway, so Krishna is non-different, or Giriraj, the stones from Govardhan Hill, are non-different from Krishna. Giriraj is considered to be the best servant of Krishna, and he's also Krishna's son. That's a great mystery. We find many Vaishnavas who worship Govardhan as a servant, and many Vaishnavas who worship as Krishna. So how is that possible? Well, look at Balaram. Balaram is not different from Krishna, and he's a servant of Krishna. He serves Krishna as a Brahman thread. He serves Krishna as a sannasana. He serves Krishna as the clothes. These are all, and even the temple is an incarnation, manifestation of Baladeva. Okay, so we're going to do that same thing with the second verse, that the gopis are dancing around Vrindavan. Gopi Jana, Krishna is enjoying the gopis' association, but not enjoying material. He's enjoying the loving exchanges. The gopis all have spiritual bodies, and they're engaged in intimate loving, just trying to please Krishna. What is that loving exchange? They're simply thinking, I want to give Krishna pleasure. The material world, loving exchange is, I scratch your back, you scratch my back. You heard that before? That, you know, you can do something, a business deal. It's a business deal. Not all loving exchange. Vaishnavas have love, loving exchanges between each other. They don't want to negate that. The dati prajati radati. Duyam adyati prajati. That's important. But the loving exchanges between the gopis and Krishna, the gopis are simply thinking, let me give Shyam some happiness. And Krishna is being controlled by those loving exchanges, and they're both enjoying. And because the gopis are simply thinking of Krishna's happiness, They're enjoying more than Krishna. Therefore, Krishna appears to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to enjoy as much as the gopis. So, Gopi Jana Madhava Giribhaja Padi. So, Krishna is the lifter of Govardhan Hill and they're dancing. So, anyways, picture that. Everybody got it? Govardhan Hill, Krishna dancing, gopis with gopis, dancing with them. I want to give Krishna pleasure. And we'll chant that three times too. See, there could be a whole course. Prabhupada has actually given many classes on this Jai Radha Madhava. But it's just such a wonderful meditation that next time you sit in Bhagavatam class, or before Bhagavatam class, meditate on the meaning. When you give Bhagavatam class, meditating on the meaning of this prayer. So, you chant this, I guess, three times again. Just try to visualize. Gopis, Krishna, dancing, close to Giriraj, and then simply thinking, we want Krishna to be happy. Krishna, you may crush us by your embrace, you may leave us brokenhearted by not being present before us, but we're completely free to do anything and everything for you. In the name of our worshipful Lord, unconditionally. Gopi jana balabha giri padata de
Gopi jana balabha giri padata
de Gopi jana balabha giri padata de
Gopi jana
Gini Manu Dharati
Gopi Jana Balabha Givaya Jari.
Actually, Prabhupada said that all the Vrindavan of Krishna's pastimes are contained in this one prayer. Alright, next line. Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjan. So, anybody have any ideas what that means? Yashoda Nandana? Who's that? Son of Mother Yashoda, that's Krishna. When I hear the word Yashoda, I mean, you would all have different pictures in your mind when you hear the word, the combination of words Yashoda Nandana. I basically picture Krishna being tied up around his waist. I mean, the Damodar pastimes. But you can, there's other pastimes too. You know, where Krishna ate butter, I mean, ate dirt, sorry. Or butter. But he ate dirt, and Yashoda Maya says, I heard you ate dirt because someone told me. Who told her? Balaram. So open your mouth wide. And in that mouth, there are all the universes, and Mother Yashoda's in the mouth too. And she gets bewildered. Krishna covers her again with the yoga mala. So, anyway, well, however you picture Yashoda and Nandana, Krishna and Mother Yashoda, Rajaranjana, that means the pleaser of the residents of Vrindavan, Rajaranjana. So he's the pleaser of the residents of Vrindavan. So, as you can see, yeah, picture Mother Yashoda, Krishna, any pastime, and then all the residents of Vrindavan appreciating this wonderful interaction between Yashoda Mayi and Krishna. Let's try this particular verse. Just take a second, visualize, picture, imagine, whatever your capacity is. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana
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 Yashoda
Very nice. And then finally, Yamuna Tira Anachara. Yamuna means what? The river Yamuna, which encircles Vrindavan. Yamuna Tira Vanachari, that means basically around the path of the Yamuna, Krishna is wandering. So who is he wandering with? The gopis. It's described even in the Krishna book that the gopis and Krishna are walking arm in arm together. And sometimes when Krishna is walking with the gopis, he leaves them. And he leaves them to create a mood of separation. And then he leaves them and he goes with Srimati Radharani. And then he leaves Srimati Radharani. I think most of you know that story. And then they're all bereft, looking for Krishna, going around the shores of the Yamuna, looking for Krishna. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? And they're feeling so much separation that they're even imitating Krishna's pastimes. You know, one of the gopis may believe that she's the Kaliya serpent. And the other gopi may believe that she's Krishna. And she's, I guess, dancing on the first gopi's head. This is described in the Krishna book. So all this is happening around the Yamuna River. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. So try to picture this, visualize it, that Krishna is walking with the gopis, arm in arm, around the Yamuna, and they're exchanging loving pastimes. Because there's perverted reflections of this in the material world, where boyfriend and girlfriend, they walk arm in arm. I mean, I hate to admit it, when I was young, very young, 5 years of age, they put me on the stage walking arm in arm with a little girl. Preparing you to be admired the rest of your life. So, but anyway, so that's a perverted reflection. And if we hear about the pastimes between Radha and Krishna, then all these desires to enjoy society, friendship, and love in this world will dissipate and disappear. So, picture Krishna and the gopis walking on the banks of the Yamuna. We'll chant this, we'll take a second just to visualize and picture this. Yamuna Tira Vanachari.
Yamuna Tira Vanachari.
Yamuna Tira Vanachari.
Yamuna Tira Vanachari.
Yamuna Tira Vanachari. So these are very sacred sounds. Just like we, before we go and we go on the altar to some deity worship or even see the deities, we take, or we assume a mood, hopefully, of awe and reverence, we bow down, and we approach Krishna with great care. Just like it's described in the prayers of the spiritual master we chant every morning. Caution. So in the same way, when we approach these spiritual sound vibrations, and it's not just the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra that's non-different from Krishna. All these different mantras that are given by the spiritual master are connections to the spiritual realm, or by the great acharyas are connections to the spiritual realm. So with the same mood, just like we have, you have 10 offenses on chanting. These offenses also apply to chanting these songs. That's why I started stressing this. I didn't plan on doing this. But when I saw that everybody was coming after they heard Jai Radhakrishna this morning, it sort of inspired me to do this. Because these songs are, in one sense, non-different from the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. The name of Krishna, form of Krishna, the pastimes of Nama, Guna, Rupa, Leela, all these different aspects of the Lord are vinatvam namanamino, which means they're non-different than the Supreme Personality of God. So you want to have reverence for them. Okay, so that was a brief introduction to myself today, which I haven't quite done. So let's go back to the topic. The topic, of course, is always remembering Krishna and never forgetting Krishna, and experiencing ecstasy by connecting with Krishna, and getting back in the groove that we used to be in when we joined the Krishna consciousness movement. And as we mentioned yesterday, for those of you who weren't here, the two regulative principles we're interested in are what?
Always remembering
Krishna and never forgetting Krishna. That means the mind. It means keeping Krishna on the mind. And we also mentioned this process or principle of Niyamagraha, which means doing things without remembering Krishna, which is the cause, according to Rupa Goswami, of fall down. In other words, if we're doing our devotional service, if we're chanting these mantras, and we're just doing it unconsciously, it's a cause of leaving Krishna consciousness. Wow. It's not only that you're not connected to Krishna, but it may be a cause of your blooping. Let me give you an example from the material world of what happens when you're not conscious of what you're doing. It's a very interesting example. Once upon a time, not many years ago, about 2 years ago, there were two pilots in a commercial plane. That means the people who drive the plane. So, they had this process when they fly a plane called automatic pilot. I don't know if you know what that means. I used to fly a plane. So you just turn a switch on, you put the plane in the right direction, and you can sit back. Of course, nowadays they're coming out with this for cars too. Self-driving cars. Pretty good. You won't have to have a license anymore. You sit in the car and the car drives you around. So what happened, these two pilots were flying this commercial plane, a big plane, like 200 people inside the plane. And they started to have a conversation. They weren't paying attention to what they were supposed to be paying attention to, which was the plane. Of course, they could use the automatic pilot, but you still got to pay attention to it. So they were talking about football or some stupid thing. Sorry if I offended anyone. Anyway, they were looking at some mundane thing. And whatever. And talking. So they didn't notice that they had passed the airport that they were supposed to land at. And they were 300 kilometers beyond the airport, and the people of the control tower, they were trying to call the pilots. Hello, whatever airlines, 21, please come in. Not only that, but they called out the Air Force to shoot down the plane. Because, you know, this is something that's happened before. The terrorists have taken over, and they, as you're aware, you know, they hit different buildings, New York, some buildings were hit. And so the pilots looked out the window, and they saw these jet planes next to them. You know, these Air Force jet planes. They said, well, we have a problem. And then they said, what's happening? And they said, you've overshot the airport by 200 miles, 300 miles. And then it turned around. So they turned around and landed. But guess what? They lost their jobs. They didn't get shot down, but they lost their jobs. So the moral of the story applying to Krishna consciousness is that we put ourselves on automatic pilot. How many times, for those of you who have second initiation, do you think to yourself, didn't I say the Gayatri Mantra today? Especially the noon one. The morning one's easy. You know, you get up, the sun's rising. Fine, that's easy. But the noon one, that's the tough one to remember. Did I say it? And then sometimes in the past, I put a little mark on a piece of paper just there. remind me what he said. That means we're out of touch. If you don't remember saying the rounds or your Gayatri mantra, then you're out of touch. Has anyone ever forgotten eating prasadam? Did I eat today? I don't remember. Raise your hand if you ever forgot that you ate prasadam. Not a single person. And as far as the round, that's why we need the counter beats, because we forget that we chant. That's not good. So, anyway, so we should become more attentive to what we're doing and not do things on automatic pilot. That's one topic. Another topic is very interesting. It's called rituals. Now, we're not talking about chanting the holy name right now or chanting the Gayatri Mantra, but we have a lot of rituals we do during the day that are secondary to those particular chanting rules. Can anyone think of any rituals that we do? Give you a hint. Nobody got the hint. Everyone's with me. Putting tilak. How many times do you put on tilak and you don't say the mantras? Or you don't think of what the mantras mean? Then it's like putting on war paint. You know, war paint? War paint means, it's an American saying that you had the American Indians before they went to war. They would put on all the paint before they started killing everybody. This is like putting on war paint. Simply putting on something on the body is not tilak. So, I'm not suggesting to eliminate doing it. I'm suggesting to be in touch while you're doing these essential items in devotional service that maybe not as essential as chanting the holy name or following the four regulated principles, but to be in touch like that. So let's read something about that Prabhupada wrote about rituals, because there are some rituals that may be useful in some parts of the world and that are not useful in other parts of the world. There are some rituals that Prabhupada instructed us to do in India that Prabhupada didn't want us to do in the West. And I'll explain why. But first I'll read Prabhupada's own statements for the Madhulila, 23rd chapter. Here's Prabhupada's statement. A candidate for Krishna consciousness in the Western world should be taught about renunciation of material existence, but one should teach candidates from a country like India in a different way. The teacher, Acharya, has to consider time candidates and country. He must avoid the principle of Niyam Agraha. There's that word again. That is, I probably use this word quite often in his books. That is, he should not try to perform the impossible. Whatever is possible in one country may not be possible in another. The Acharya's duty is to accept the essence of devotional service. There may be a little change here and there as far as yukta vairagya, proper renunciation, is concerned. Dry renunciation is forbidden by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and we have also learned this from our spiritual master, His Divine Grace, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. The essence of devotional service must be taken into consideration, not the outward paraphernalia. In other words, if we accept too many things, it may disconnect us. I'm going to give an example of that in a minute later. Sanatana Goswami wrote his Vaishnava Smriti, Hari Bhakti Vilas, which was specifically meant for India. In those days, India was more or less following the principles of Smartavidhi. Srila Sanatana Goswami had to keep pace with this, and his Hari Bhakti Vilas was compiled with this in mind. Just one other quote. A Vaishnava is immediately purified, provided he follows the rules and regulations of his bona fide spiritual master. It is not necessary that the rules and regulations followed in India be exactly the same as those in Europe, America, and other Western countries. Simply imitating without effect is called Yamaha. Not following the regulated principles is called Niyamagraha. I'll probably describe this. Becoming enamored of these rituals is the next impediment called in Agraha. Because a devotee fully engages in the supreme service of the Lord, he automatically fulfills all other obligations. He doesn't have to execute all the details of the rituals. Not that unpack that. Because that may be a little confusing to all of you. And that's another reason we become disconnected. That we, as the movement progresses, at least this is my experience, we add more and more rituals. It was very simple. I'm not saying all of them are unnecessary. Many of them aren't necessary. But when I join the movement, chant Hare Krishna, be happy, of course, wake up early, chant around, follow four regular rituals, offer all of them to Krishna. Nice. And study Prabhupada's books, learn your Shastra. Very nice. But we've added quite a bit. And Prabhupada here mentions something called the Hari Bhakti Vilas. Hari Bhakti Vilas is the Vaishnava Smriti. Now, I'm going to ask a question that will probably illustrate how most of us are not following the Hari Bhakti Vilas and therefore going to hell. So I feel sorry for all of you, including myself. So, who here, raise your hand, be honest, if you eat carrots. Just about 100%. A few bona fide devotees here. So I also eat carrots. This is a confession. I feel bad about it. But I will eat carrots tonight too. So the Hari Bhakti Vilas describes very explicitly, don't eat carrots. Why? Because the ritualistic brahmanas in India, they didn't eat carrots. Because in one of the Puranas, there's some statement that the carrots are the bones and the blood of some sage. I understand. But we also understand that most of the Puranas, other than the Bhagavad Purana, of course the Padma Purana and Kurma Purana, have not really been passed down to separate successions. So Sri Padmavacharya, in fact, states even the Mahabharata has been changed dramatically. So, anyway, so the point is the Brahmins in India, real ritualistic Brahmanas, they follow that particular injunction. So in order to preach to those ritualistic Brahmanas, it's necessary to present Krishna consciousness in that context. Because people will not respect us, at least when the six Goswamis were present. Now it's a little different. Now everybody eats carrots. I mean, I've never gotten thrown out of an Indian home for eating carrots since I joined the Hare Krishna movement. In fact, most of them eat carrots. So, but time, place, and manner, these things were put in there for a specific purpose to engage people with brahminical backgrounds. We want them to become devotees too. So devotees sometimes they take these things out of the Hari Bhakti Vilas, not understanding the purpose of them. And by doing so, they're doing something called Niyamagraha. Now, if I was in a place where people would criticize me for eating carrots, I would not eat carrots. But I would understand the purpose. In other words, each and everything we do, each ritual we do, think of the purpose, not just the mantras which we went over before, but think of the purpose of it. You know, tilak. Does anyone know what the purpose of tilak is? I know you're saying the mantras. What is the purpose of tilak? What? Protection is one thing.
You're decorating the temple.
That's right. You're marking your body as a temple of God. Because God is in your heart. When we offer obeisances, we're not offering obeisances to the body. Please accept my obeisances, body. All glories of Srila Prabhupada, my dear material body. We're offering obeisances to the Lord in the heart. Of course, the soul, too. So the body is a temple of God. So we're decorating the temple. That's pretty nice, isn't it? I mean, that same sort of metaphor is there in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the cleansing of the Gundicha temple. When you cleanse the Gundicha temple, it's like cleansing your heart, right? And when you cleanse your heart, you have a sitting place for the Supreme Personality of Godhead to manifest himself. So that's really a wonderful feeling. Because when you're putting on tilak, I'm decorating the temple. It's meant to say, this is Krishna's body. Is another way to think of it is like sometimes you put a tattoo on yourself. I don't. Let's say there's a boyfriend and girlfriend. They'll put, I belong to Mary. I belong to whatever a name here in Serena. I belong to him. Of course, when they change, they have to erase the tattoo, change the name. One young man had a tattoo of his girlfriend on the shoulder, joined the Hare Krishna movement, had to change it to Krishna, playing the flute, whatever. You do that. I mean, Krishna looks very beautiful too. So the body, in other words, we're marking Krishna's property. That's another way to look at it. So that way we connect. Sometimes, I'll give you a practical example of my own life. Sometimes we have some injunction that may disconnect us. Alright, here's the example I give. And this I'll get soundly criticized for. That when you do RT to the deities, you're supposed to count different circles, right? Those of you. And the one, and the two, and the three, and the four, and the five, and the six. At each article, you see, you do a different type of counting. Those of you who have been in my class have heard me talk about this before. So you do a different type of counting. So with me, if I start counting, I don't think I'm a Christian. I have to be honest. Sorry about that. I know you're not going to allow me in the altar in Pachacala anymore. What can I do? So I just, try to do seven, obviously. And I do just try to think, Krishna, please accept this. And I try to understand each and every article, what it's meant for. The incense is offered to Krishna, it's a nice smell. And the handkerchief is in Krishna's hands. And the water, of course, before that. And the flame, it's an honorary thing. And the chandra is like the son of a king. And the peacock fan is to cool it down. So I just think of what the purpose of each and every article is when I do it. And I don't count so much. And one time, this is actually a funny story. One time I was called to do a deity installation in Fiji for Radha Krishna. And there happened to be there at the same time the deity worship minister. His name is Nishriya Kavacha. Some of you met him. He's a good friend of mine. So he said, I'm going to be watching you. the first art, I'm going to be watching you and making sure you do it right. And I have a tendency to get nervous sometimes. Because you have people watching me, reporting on me, make a report to the GBC, I didn't count enough times. So I said, you want me to do it right, you sit right at my feet as I'm doing RT and tell me what to do. So there I was doing RT. Okay, what do I do next? Okay, thank you. So I don't really get into all those details as you could tell. So that's interesting. All right. Let's do a sharing type of thing. We're getting short of time. Like, turn to the person next to you, behind you, and what sort of rituals are you doing that, number one, may be disconnecting you from Krishna? And how can you connect yourself to Krishna with that particular ritual? Think about it. I mentioned tilak. There's other things, like we did yesterday, obeisances. There's other things. I mean, we do a whole bunch of whole bunch of different things, like Prashadam prayer is a ritual. For ritual, I don't mean something bad. I mean, ritual means you, as a performance that you do that's prescribed for you. Mangalarti, taking prashadam. So, try to describe something you do, forget about the word ritual, something you do on a regular basis, how it may not be necessary, or how you can connect it more in your consciousness to Krishna. And we'll give you 5 minutes to do that. All right? So turn to the person. Ready, set, go.
I'm going to go to the hospital.
Someone starts chanting in Krishna, I said, no, Hare Bol, that means be quiet. Or someone will call someone else Prabhu. And they'll say, Prabhu, I hate you. That means, oh, my dear master, I hate you. So we use these words without really understanding the meaning of them, which is, it's quite interesting. I mean, sometimes, I mean, this is, I guess, a little controversial. So we, when we're talking about the men and the women in the temple, you say, Prabhu's one side, Mataji's the other side. So the term is a little unequal, isn't it? So the master's on one side, the mother's on the other side. It shows that I'm liberal. Anyway, so. So does anybody... I just think that as what we're saying, we should be more aware of how what it means. So, does someone want to share some ritual or thing they do that maybe taking them away from Krishna instead of connecting them to Krishna? Don't talk about the four regulated princes. We already dealt with that. We dealt with marijuana yesterday. So. Does anyone want to share? Yes. A microphone for her. Did you have a microphone? All right. Sorry.
Hare Krishna. Not this Daisy and I were talking about maybe not a ritual, but she mentioned one interesting situation 8 years ago that Mataji's wore a glove on left hand not to touch anything with it. So it's not a ritual, but it's some kind of rule that disconnected her a little bit from eating prasadam or doing anything with the left hand. So it was interesting, just like an information.
That's quite interesting, you wear a glove. Even more interesting would be to tie your hand behind your back. So you wouldn't touch anything with your left hand.
Yeah, and then she heard with you what you heard about India. Yeah.
Actually, I heard in India that children are raised that they, from the time they're very small, they're not using their left hand as much as we, you know.
Right.
In the West, we have a tendency to use it more. So it was quite strange for me, and then I stopped. I use both hands. I'm not focused on eating prasadam in Vrindavan or something. Okay, we try to be using the right hand, but
And the reason that ritual started was quite interesting is because sometimes people, anyway, use the left hand in the toilet, I guess I have a funny story to repeat. I was in Australia one time on an airplane, you know, dressed like this. And the Australians, they say whatever they feel. That's the nature of Australia, you know. Whatever they feel, whatever's in their mind comes out. They're honest, you see what you see is what you get. So this guy, you know, Australian guy walks in. He said, "Oh, Hare Krishna! I love your food!" Because he eats at our restaurant. He says, "But why don't you use toilet paper?" He said, and even worse, "Why do you use your hands?" And nobody would sit next to me in the airport. So, you know, I'm using my left hand. Of course, I use my right hand to eat. I don't use my left hand to eat. Observing the custom, because usually I'm with people from India, and also it's clean. So the reason I do it is because it's a cleanliness thing, not just because it's a ritual. So I connected with Krishna, because, you know, the left hand is used for some pure things like that. Very good. Anybody else have some interesting? Yes.
I shared the morning program is one ritual that maybe for sure sometimes keeps me awake, disconnect me because of rajastic mood and hurrying to the job and not having enough time to do it properly. And one thing I can do to improve it is to go deeper with the meaning, and you help us so much. Thank you. And another thing I heard, that morning program, which was motivational, that morning program reduces 50% of karma. This is something that I heard. So it also motivated me, but it's not shastrically, you know.
No, there's nothing in shastra that says that. But I got to just hear, the chanting of Hare Krishna reduces 100% of the karma. Even if you chant accidentally, joking, doing anything, this is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the Harinam Chintamani. All your karma is gone. So, but yes, if you connect with the morning program, then it's no longer like a passionate thing, I gotta go. And that should be done from the time you wake up, or even when you go to sleep the night before. When I'm in a temple, because here I'm staying like 45 minutes away, so I can't go to the morning program here. But when I'm in the temple, I always go to the morning program, and I wake up and I think, wow, I get a chance to connect to Krishna. Instead of thinking, oh my God, I got to wake up, it's ungodly hours. It's all in the mind. It's actually all in the mind. You're thinking, I have to do this. Or all the devotees who get angry with me, just think, wow, I get to, you know, positive, it's all positive. I get to connect with Krishna. With Prabhupada, with the deity, wow, I get to see Guru Nityananda. I am so fortunate. Then you get up and you chant and jump out of bed. I used to be a brahmachari leader many years ago. You were born. And the way because people weren't connecting, I had to get them up, some brahmacharis, I had to drag in the shower and turn on the water as they were in their sleeping bags. Other ones I had to play the cartels next to their ear. They were not connected. Or they were connected with their anger, rather than being connected with the spiritual activity. So, anyone else? Because this is going to be the last thing we do today. Tomorrow we'll do the Guru Vajra. Any other? Yeah, back there.
Thank you, my licenses. I thought of this kind of rituals, which is Ekadashi. So we have Ekadashi quite often, I think, like twice a month.
Yeah.
And I noticed that, you know, when Ekadashi comes, as you said, we think like, oh, come on, no cereal, you know, no cereals. So it's kind of, you know, fasting. Well, what should I eat? You know, or should I eat like nothing, something like this? And the mood is, you know, totally down. And you feel like, you know, not that happy or something like this. And then I realized that Krishna is not happy, you know, this is like a festival, you know, Ekadashi. So you can dedicate the whole day to Krishna, and it's like, you know, a huge opportunity. But instead you think like, oh, I'm not going to eat this, I cannot eat that, you know, something like this. Yes.
Good. That's a good realization. Actually, the devotees, many times they concentrate on the negative aspects of Ekadasi. Oh, I eat grains. Apaparusha is in the grains. Oh my God, I hope I eat grains today. I'll go to hell. But actually, said Ekadasi, Prabhupada said Ekadasi is a positive thing. That you make more advancements, like going to Vrindavan. It's a special day for connecting to Krishna. And you reduce, the purpose of not eating grains and all these things is to reduce your bodily necessities for one day. That's all. But if you're reducing to such an extent that you hurt your health, or you get dizzy, or you can't think properly, then eat a little, not grains, but just eat a little, some prasadam, some simple prasadam. So, I'll tell you one interesting ritual, which I still follow because I don't want to be criticized, is that devotees have this ritual that if you, we mentioned this the other day in Bosnia, that if you chant Gayatri and your thread is out like that, a demon will come and steal your mantra from you. So I was thinking, can a cloth actually protect me from demons? That's pretty good. I mean, it's like when I took sannyas, I was taught that this cloth will protect me from women. This is the purpose of the cloth. I'm protected. Later on, I found out it's for collecting donations. So that was the positive reason for wearing the cloth. So, in other words, there's a positive reason. Yeah, we have one. To keep your job, to keep your beads clean, because if they're out, I mean they're sacred. They're a sacred object. You're not really supposed to be revealing your Ishtadev, your mantra, before people in general. Prabhupada many times would chant his japa in front of the devotees with the beads out. There's pictures of Prabhupada doing that. There's Prabhupada chanting Gayatri with his thread out too. I'm not saying you do that, just, you know, I follow the custom because I want to respect the custom. Sometimes I do it for that. The japa is to protect the beads, and it's a sacred activity. You know, it's really a sacred activity. Now, anyone know the reason for why we don't touch the japa beads with this finger?
Because it was used to curse people in the
Vedic society. Yeah, one is used to curse people, and it's the finger of ego. We don't want our ego interfering with Krishna consciousness, because it's in India there's a tradition that if you point to someone, you're insulting them. I'm insulting all of you. So when you go to the deities, and this is, it's a tradition, you can respect the tradition, but be aware of why you're doing it. When you go to the deities, you want to show some of the deities, I go like that, there's Krishna. I don't go, there's Krishna. Because that's considered an insult. So there's different traditional things that come from India that we respect, but you have to go to the music. Especially if you're in India. I mean, if you're in the West, it's a different thing, yeah.
I saw, like, when we offer flowers,
yeah,
many times the devotees first put you flower to your forehead, then give you to smell. And I think this part of the ritual is not necessary.
You just
smell it. And the funny thing was, there was one devotee, he was a young devotee, and whatever item he considered holy, he would put on the forehead. And then once there was a light incense that was on, and then he was looking at the incense, and then the forehead was like. Then he realized, oh, you have to discriminate. You don't touch it.
Get that? And sometimes rituals start, like Robert told the story about the man who had the Brahmin who had a cat. The cat kept trying to jump in the fire. He tied the cat up. I think many of you know that story. Then, because he wanted to protect the cat. But his disciples saw that and thought that's part of the fire sacrifice. So when his disciple did a fire sacrifice, his disciples always found the cat, tied him up to a tree. And that went on, Imam Parampara, Parapram, Imam Rajar, Shayoga, through the chain of disciplic succession, was passed down. So, if you're going to do some ritual, know the purpose for it, know how it fits into the society that you're in, you know, because we don't want to disturb the Mayans who are materially, those who are materially attached to. Even if the ritual doesn't have a meaning, sometimes you follow it because to relate to the people with, just like the carrot thing I just mentioned. You know, if you're with people who are ritualistic Brahmins, follow that. So it's, but in other words, be aware of what you're doing while you're doing it, and we have to end now, or else we'll get in trouble. Yeah, one quick.
Oh, with adjustment, do you think only adjusting to India, my question goes to adjusting to West, is it also?
Yes. Yes, when I'm in the West, and some person comes up to me and wants to shake a hand, I don't go. I shake their hand. And sometimes, you know, I'm a sannyasi, but sometimes a lady will, you know, just be in it and she'll shake a hand. I think so. Oh, it's a lady. Woo! You know, I have to shake the hands, you know. Whatever, you know. Don't get burnt out, you know, whatever. Bent out of shape and all these things. All right, on that note, tomorrow we'll do the Guru Vashna prayer. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Wow, Srila Prabhupada.